I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Listen, all you motherfuckers.
Politics, politics, humor, humor, tequila, tequila, and an IQ of under 64. Yeah. You're listening to Art Cop Radio, 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 Radio.
Hi, my name is Bart. Welcome to Bart Cop Radio Show 65. Geez, who thought we'd have 65 of these old buggers done by now? But that's where we find ourselves. How about that? I'm taping this Thursday, the something, maybe the 13th, 14th, somewhere in there. Who knows? You know, time just goes flying by. Who can catch some of it? But we got one of them funny shows today, some of this, some of that. Let me see what we got on the program. We got, we're going to be sniping at that Bush boy a little bit. You know what? I don't know if I ever said this before. I just don't care for the man. He just doesn't do a thing for me. I think he's a bad person, and he's over his head. I think he's got no business sitting behind the Oval Office desk. We got a thing called Democrats. It's probably good. It's long, so I hope it's good. Got a letter from a good friend of mine, Barbara Santee. Don't know if I mentioned that in the rant, but she's a big-time Democrat here in Tulsa. She wrote a letter to the editor they printed in the Tulsa paper about what a monkey our president was. I thought it was humorous, and as you know, we are all about the humor. Got a couple of things on sports. Got a couple of sports things for you, but it's not really so much about sports. It is about the politics of sports. And a lot of it involves Mr. Randy Moss, who is an evil black man. You know why? Because he wears his hair in an afro. Oh, that makes him bad. It makes him evil. So we got a couple of sports thing there. Got a couple of letters to the editor. You might like that. Got a thing says Tom. Don't know what that means, but it might have something to do with Armstrong Williams. Got a little bit of torture talk. Fellas asked me about some torture talk. Here's something says Willie Horton. Gee, I wonder what that could be about. It's last and maybe least, but we're going to talk a little bit about music. Someone was asking about Jimi Hendrix the other day, and I'm more of a Page fan than a Hendrix fan, because I thought Page had more colors, more dimensions, more facets, if you would. And of course you would. So I'm going to play a little bit of that. Probably going to take 2-3 minutes. If you don't have the 2-3 minutes, I understand. I'm a busy man myself. Since we're all busy, let's get right into the show. Oh, but before we get into our traditional shot of Chinaco, I got to tell you a little story. I was in the spirit store the other day getting some white Zinfandel from Mrs. Bart. So I'm walking down the aisle and I hear something. I hear this, Bart Cop, Bart Cop. I thought, well, that's strange. Nobody in here knows me. The spirit store I often trade with is owned by a fellow of Middle Eastern descent. I don't know. I'm guessing he's from Iran or Iraq or Lebanon or Syria, somewhere over there. And just figuring, Oklahoma, I figure the poor guy probably gets shit all day. I'll bet 5 times a day he gets, you know, hey, Sam nigger, what are you doing here? But he probably just gets it constantly. So I, just to give, you know, just to kind of bounce out a little bit, I'm a little friendlier to the guy. When I buy something from him, I always ask him to double check the price. I say, oh, this seems too cheap. Are you sure this is the right? And we got a little funny kind of little game we play there. It's just something I just want to let the guy know that we're not all that way in Oklahoma. I just try to be nice to the guy. But he doesn't know who I am. So I hear this, Bark up, Bark up. And I'm looking around. I don't see anybody. That's a little spooky. And I see, over here, Bark up, over here. And I walk over and I see behind the cash register on the top shelf, there's about a 20-inch tall red bottle of tequila. I have never, ever seen tequila in a red bottle before. For all I know, it was red tequila. But that would be bad. We don't do it. Tequila is only one color. There's this one company that makes the blue tequila. They should be slapped. It's blue. It's called Aqua Tequila or Aqua Tequila, something like that. But it's crap. No one, you don't ever fix tequila. If you're going to fix tequila, buy Cuervo. It's cheaper. So I see this bottle. It's Mrs. Bart's favorite. She likes the Corlejo Reposado in her margaritas, but this is the Corlejo Añejo. And I had never even seen this bottle before, let alone seen one live and in person right in front of me. And I took one look at it. Oh, I fell in love big time. I'll have to put a picture of it on a page, but it's got all the little, it's just what a tequila bottle ought to be. Very oddly shaped. I mean, you can see this from, seriously, 40, 50 feet away. I can be in a casino, and if they got a bottle of this 50 feet away, I can, boom, I'm there. I know exactly what, I can, most bottles, if I'm 20, 30 feet away, I can look at the color and the shape of the bottle and know what it is. I can't tell if it's Añejo or Reposado or silver, but these guys, they color the bottle. The Añejo comes in red, the Reposado comes in green, and the silver comes in white or clear. Now, that's cool. That makes some sense. But anyway, nice bottle. I knew as the minute I saw it, I had to have it. It was almost as certain I was going to put this on my credit card as Bush was going to invade Iraq. This was going to happen. Nothing was going to stop me from this. Nothing was going to stop me. The minute I saw it, I knew that bottle was more bought than Tom Armstrong Williams. God himself could appear before me and, no, I'm sorry, I got to do this. I was going to buy this bottle. So today, instead of the usual bottle of Chinaco, we're going to try a little sip of the Tequila Coralejo Añejo. Oh, here we go. Oh, what a pretty bottle. Damn, I'm going to keep this after the tequila's gone. Plus, it's got a little sound when you pull out the top. Oh, that's some mighty, mighty fine tequila. Oh, that's mighty fine. It's hard to pick favorites when you get up into the big leagues because all the 100% pure blue agave tequilas, they're all very good. I have yet to run into a bad one. If it's 100%, you can't get any better. All you can do there is the subtle nuances. You put two apples in yours, I put three in mine, so I like a little more apple than you do. You like a little more papaya in yours. You like a little more butter, I might like a little more pepper. It's just like Hendrix and Page. It's just whatever you like. Oh, that's good. That's real nice. That's real nice. Okay. Big, big show. Let's get started.
This is www.bartcop.com.
Everybody, everybody, let's get into it. Get stoned. Come on. Get started. Come on. Get started. Get started. Let's get it started. Ha! Let's get it started in here. Let's get it started. Ha! Let's get it started in here. Let's get it started.
It's Monday afternoon, probably the 10th. Got a little jump on Tuesday's page, so I thought I'd try to get some radio out of the way. Yesterday I was watching the football game, as many of you were. It was the Green Bay game, and Green Bay was having the most terrible time. Oh, and Brett Favre had thrown four interceptions, and it was just awful. And John Madden and Al Michaels, right-wing crackpot, were calling the game. And Michaels was saying how the defensive secondary coaches were going to be in trouble because of all this mess and the line coaches and all that. And John Madden interrupted and he said, well, you know, to me it all gets down to the head coach. Sure, you can blame this on that guy and you can blame this on that guy. But really, the head coach is the guy that really bears the responsibility because he hired the people and the bottom line comes with him. And I said out loud to Mrs. Bart, well, gee, funny how it doesn't work that way in politics. In Republican politics. Because no matter who screws up, no matter how many times Bush gets caught, it's never his responsibility. It's always somebody else's. And this goes all the way back to when the White House told that submarine commander out by Hawaii that he's supposed to turn his boat over to the Enron boys because they wanted to play with it. And those nine Japanese kids died. And all of a sudden, oh, that wasn't the White House's fault. No, it wasn't the Navy's fault. No, the captain of the submarine, for some reason, decided to turn over his submarine to the Enron boys. Now, I guess we all know how tight your average submarine commander is with the Enron boys from down in Houston, where Bush got his biggest donations and where his biggest contributors are. And somehow that just went right through. It was just like, we hate Bill Clinton so much. We're going to let this unelected monkey do anything he wants, and he will never, ever be responsible for anything. So it started with the Enron sub and the Japanese kids, and it continues to this day with the 1,350 dead soldiers. It's not Bush's fault. It's not Rummy's fault. It's not Cheney's fault. It's not the fault of Wolfowitz or any of those people. Somehow it's Bill Clinton's fault or the insurgents. Bush said the other day it was a handful of insurgents that were causing trouble. Well, gee, funny how 150,000 soldiers, the best trained, best equipped soldiers in the world, can't handle a handful of people. Isn't that funny? Another senior American official military guy over there said that one of them said there was 30,000 new suiciders had just hit town, and that there was about 200,000 insurgents that were ready to attack against the United States. Now, that's more people than we have. You know what they could do? I don't know if they have the internet in Iraq. Probably not. But hell, if nothing else, they could do this. And I'm not giving away any ideas. They already know this. But they could just get together and pass word of mouth. All right, 2 weeks from Friday at noon local time, wherever you are at noon, blow something up. 2 weeks from Friday at noon. In the 2 weeks it takes to get that message out, everybody, and remember, there's, 400 tons of C4 that Bush let the insurgents have? He didn't bother to guard the 400 tons, or was it more? Was it 4,000 tons? Anyway, 400 tons of C4, considering the size of a thimble, will take an airplane out of the sky. So they've got hundreds of tons of this stuff, and 200,000 people, 30,000 brand new. And it's just the biggest mess ever. And what's real possible in this scenario, 2 weeks from Friday at noon, we could lose 1,000, 2,000 soldiers in a day. Is that? No, I'm sorry. That's not scary. And it's not Bush's fault either. It's all because Bush said Saddam had to be taken down right now because Bush has problems with his father. He wants to fight him mano a mano. He's got to be a better president than his dad. And number one, that includes never raising taxes no matter how bankrupt the country is. Bush raised taxes in 91 or 92 because it was the right thing to do. Him and Bob Dole and whoever else, the Democrats, got together and said, this has to be done because we are so far in a hole, we've got to pay our way somehow. We can't just keep putting things on the credit card and never make a payment. So we're going to have to start paying this down somehow. But Bush's number one priority of all time would be never ever to raise taxes. All he's going to do is spend money and give money away to the super rich and invade whatever countries he wants. And he's never going to back down. Number one, never ever with the tax increase. Number two, we never ever back down. And number three, I'm going to invade whoever I effing want because I have to make myself look better than my failed daddy. What could be more dangerous than a man-child, a mentally 9 or 10 years old, trying to outwit his dad, trying to outdo his dad, probably for mom's affections. I don't know if we got a full-blown Oedipus complex here or what. I hope I pronounced that correctly. But we've got just a really, really scary thing, and it's way the hell out of control. And funny how responsibility never gets to the White House, and a whole lot of that is Kerry's fault because he refused to even suggest the idea. Koresh forbid someone suggest that Bush might be at fault. How in the world could you hold the captain of the boat liable for striking a giant iceberg in the dark because he was going too fast? How could you possibly ever do that? The Republicans say no. The president is not responsible. The buck never stops anywhere near Bush. And isn't it just sickening the way the Democrats take it? But anyway, funny how in football, John Madden says the responsibility belongs to the head man. But if you're a Republican president, the responsibility belongs to Clinton or the bad guys or whoever. It's the American-hating liberals. It's always got to be someone else's problem except the guy whose problem it is. The guy who made the decision to screw up, it's not his fault. Headline in the USA Today, character issue puts Democrats on the defensive. Democrats' presidential candidates have not found a way to turn attacks around on GOP, which some say must be done to have a chance in 08. Well, the reason they can't find a way to turn those attacks around is because they don't read BarkCop.com. I have yet to see an attack that I couldn't turn around and triple and send back in less than a minute. It is so fucking easy to do. But they refuse. Right next to the headline, they have a picture of two yahoos with the giant flip-flop. The girl's got a flop written on her shoe, and the guy's got a flip written on his shoe. And they're just got the biggest grins on their face because they're calling Kerry a flip-flopper. So why the hell didn't Kerry at the convention run through a list of 40 or 50 of Bush's major flip-flops? It's so fucking easy to do. But they say Democrats can't find a way to do it. Well, how about they hire some third graders How about to hire some 9-year-olds? They can think a little bit. Hell, if nothing else, do the schoolyard bully taunting thing. You sit there and go, nyeh, 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 and score more points than the Democrats are doing. Anything's better than an absolute surrender. How many times you heard me say, I can beat up Mike Tyson if he doesn't fight back? So what's the big headline? Bart Cop meaner than Tyson? Bart Cop a bigger badass than Tyson? Is that what the USA Today is going to say? Yes, if Tyson refuses to fight back. Imagine a Democratic presidential candidate and his allies assailing the character of the Republican nominee in ads and speeches every day for 8 months. Having trouble imagining that? That's because Democrats generally don't have the stomach or the discipline to do it. Often they don't even effectively fight back when under attack themselves. Everybody sees this now. I feel like I was the only guy saying it a year ago. Maybe I wasn't. Maybe there's a lot of people saying it. But, you know, how long have we been using terms like pink tutu Democrat and gelding Democrat and cowardly bastards? But no, nobody saw it. Now it's here. Now it's here all over the place. It's here like the damn tsunami. Everywhere you look, we got another Democrat afraid to fight, cowering in fear, wetting themselves under a table like Bernard Shaw. What the hell is it going to take? But with George W. Bush's second inauguration next week, Democrats are pondering their choices in a February 12th election for party chairman and rethinking what might be called their character problem. We don't have a character problem. We're the party that wants to help the little guy. We're the party that is not set on steering the entire nation towards making the rich richer. We're the normal people. The other guys are the crazies. We're the normal guys that are trying to do good for the most amount of people. But since the Democrats refuse to fight, we're seen as the weirdos. Democrats as a group are uneasy about attacking and defending on character, says Harold Ickes, one of my favorites, a former Clinton aide who heads the Media Fund, a political ad organization. But they damn well better get the stomach, Ickes says, because we've seen way too many of our candidates taken down on issues of character. See, again, George Bush is a cocaine-doing, AWOL-deserting bastard who lied us into a war to kill 100,000 Iraqis and steal $100 million a day, and the Democrats can't come up with an issue to mention during the election. My God, if it was Al Capone, could you come up with an issue? Do you think you could mention anything about, robbing banks or violence or corruption or anything? If you can't find a character problem with George Bush, you don't speak English. You're not from this country. But the Democrats continue down this road. What is wrong with them? In the past 5 presidential races, the only Democrat to win was the one who avoided the draft and admitted on TV to causing pain in his marriage. The other 3 nominees were military veterans with solid marriages and public records. Yet their opponents, Bush, managed to brand them as unpatriotic. Michael Dukakis, the card-carrying member of the ACLU, untruthful Al Gore, the serial exaggerator, unprincipled and weak, Kerry, the flip-flopper who couldn't be trusted to keep the nation safe, all are variations on a theme. These men have character flaws that disqualify them from the White House. If a candidate refuses to fight, maybe we really can't use him as a president. If you're unwilling to fight, what are you going to do when Al-Qaeda attacks? If you're unwilling to fight, we can't use you in the Oval Office. It's pretty damn simple. If you're not willing to fight for yourself, for your party, for what you believe in, we can't use you in the White House, because you're just going to sit there and roll over for every bully that tries to step on America's toes. Isn't that pretty obvious? We were caught off guard by the perennial Republican attack dog mentality, says Bill Richardson, governor of New Mexico, and a potential 2008 presidential candidate, reflecting on 2004. We got to find ways to develop our own. Bill Richardson, you are wrong. I like you, dude, but you are just wrong as hell. How can you be caught off guard by a tactic that they've been using since 88? What the hell's wrong with you? How many decades have to go by before you catch up on something? You know they're going to do the same thing in 2008. They're going to pick out 1 or 2 points, and they're going to hammer them home with the help of the media. And if the idiot Democrat stands there like Kerry and lets the swift boats come after him for 6 weeks and doesn't say a word, of course we're going to lose. Somehow, we've got to get me at least some kind of minor, junior advisory role for the next presidential race. Somehow, I've got to be in the room. I've got to be in the email loop. I've got to be somehow connected to this, because they're just going to fuck it up again if they don't have someone on the team that says, no, we fight back. We don't do it that way. We don't lay down. We stand up and say, no, mother effer, we're not going to do it that way. We're going to do it this way. And we're going to beat the hell out of them with facts. We're not going to just say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry. Why do we fight like that? So, yes, that's one of my goals now. Between now and 2008, somehow I've got to find someone who knows someone on the campaign to elect the Democrat. We're going to have to find a way to do that. I'm not looking for control. I just want them to run shit by me and let me add a sentence or two or recommend they take a sentence or two out. I'm good at this. I've done it for a long, long time. I knew Kerry'd lost this long time ago. Oh, it was so obvious, and I couldn't keep saying it. Every day I said, Kerry, you're blowing it, you're losing it, and every day, I'd lose more subscribers. I didn't want to hear it. But anything's better than giving the Republicans four more years. My God, will we even recognize America in 2008? We don't recognize it now. What's it going to look like 4 years from now? Somehow the Democrats have got to figure out a way to get a backbone. And I'm not Billy Badass, but my God, putting me in the room is going to raise the fight IQ of our team. I guarantee it. Some analysts wonder how a party and its top strategist can be caught off guard by a recurring tactic. It's stunning the extent to which Democrats keep repeating their errors over time, says Darrell West, a political scientist at Brown University in Providence. Bill McIntyre, a Republican pollster and strategist, says Democrats don't attack much on trust issues because they're addicted to running the conservative wacko campaign, as in, my opponent is an extreme conservative wacko who's got dangerous ideas, he adds dryly. I never worry about whether the Democrats are tough enough. He's right. We are a party of pussies. That's why America won't put us in the White House, because we're scared and afraid. How are you going to have a scared and afraid president? Bush is so confident. He's so wrong, but he's so confident. People see confidence and say, well, he seems to know what he's doing. Bush is just as wrong and pig-headed as he could be on pretty much every issue in the world. But he doesn't stand there and beg to forgive. Oh, please. Like the Democrats do. Kerry was tough when it came to Bush's policy decisions on Iraq and the economy, and many agree with McIntyre that the flip-flop tactics... Kerry was tough? I don't get this next paragraph. Kerry was tough when it came to Bush's policy decisions on Iraq and the economy. I don't know. Kerry was tough? And many agree with McIntyre that the flip-flop attacks worked in part because the guy was all over the lot. There were some elements of truth to that, but Kerry never seriously tried to counter the flip-flop charge or mount a sustained attempt to raise questions about Bush's character, and the question is why. Why did Kerry never try to counter the flip-flop charge, and why did Kerry never raise any question about Bush's character? Was it a skull-and-bones deal? Why did Kerry lay down? What are Democrats missing? For a start, some academic analysis and party figures say Democrats underestimate the weight voters give character when choosing a presidential candidate. Well, no. If we refuse to point out the flaws in the opponent, we're not underestimating character. We're just refusing to fight. A central tenet of political science is that the vote for president is highly personal, often based on instinct and intuition rather than policy decisions. But Democrats love policy. We never saw an issue that we didn't want to talk about ad nauseum, Icky says. Chad Clanton, part of Kerry's rapid response team last year, said Kerry's biting policy critiques were not enough to close the deal because people vote with their hearts as well as their heads. Much more damaging, he said, are attacks that go to what kind of leader the person would be and who they are. Well, hey, Chad, if you knew that, why the hell didn't you speak up? A Pew Research Center poll just before the election found 63% said Bush was willing to take a stand even if it's unpopular, while only 27% said that about Kerry. Well, you know, that's a pretty good point, because Bush will say, I'm going to war. I don't care if it's the wrong thing to do. I'm going to war. And people think, oh, there's a solid guy who knows what he wants. Even though he's wrong. Election night, they said a majority, like 53-45, something like that, disagreed with the war, but they voted for Bush. And they know he wrecked the economy, but they voted for him. Kerry could never persuade them he should have his hand on the tiller in a time of international terrorism, Icky says. And at bottom, that went to character. At bottom, it came to a judgment about who do I trust. Another problem for Democrats, they can't shake the idea that people of integrity shouldn't have to and don't need to talk about their integrity. So when they come under attack, they often shrug it off and assume voters will too. Yes, that's what the Democrats think, and they gotta fucking stop thinking like that. What's wrong with them? Joanne Sulia says Republicans are criticized for being publicly self-righteous, but she says Democrats are inwardly self-righteous because they believe they're on the side of the downtrodden so they don't have to defend themselves. That philosophy prevailed last spring when the Bush campaign spent tens of millions of dollars labeling Kerry a flip-flopper who said whatever people wanted to hear. And in August, when the Swift Boat ads suggested Kerry lied to get his decorations in the Vietnam War. Kerry advisors initially believed both storms would pass, but both caused damage. Why would they think that 6 weeks of constant hammering about Kerry as a lying traitor would have no effect on the stupid people? The voters are so stupid. Kerry's got shrapnel on his ass from volunteering to go to Vietnam, and Bush has got a hangover because he went AWOL during wartime and got drunk and screwed Mexican hookers snorting cocaine. And most people know that, but they like Bush because he takes a stand. What's wrong with people? Maybe the Democrats are too smart. That's why they need me on the team, because I can think like a stupid person. I know what the stupid people think. Roy Texaria says Kerry's silence on the Vietnam ads gave voters the impression that where there's smoke, there's fire, and why didn't this guy defend himself? When his campaign finally fought back, he says the delay suggested it was done out of political necessity and not because the charges were baseless. Now, see, that's probably right. Steve Rosenthal says the damage may have gone even deeper. If he's not defending himself in that campaign, he said there's an undertow of, this guy didn't even defend himself, how's he going to defend the country? I promise I didn't read ahead, but yes, that's what I said a few minutes ago. Icky said he urged the media fund to go after Bush on character issues, but our pollsters and voter research people and all the gurus said the money would be better spent criticizing Bush policies. He said he was convinced for a while, but by spring had bludgeoned his firm into running one ad questioning Bush's character. People always tell you they like issue ads, Icky says, but attack ads stick. They don't like them, and they do remember them. Some Democrats want killer instinct in their next nominee. They also pray for a candidate and campaign with the discipline to choose a line of attack and stick to it. You don't want your central critique to be a secret, Clinton says. You want it to be well-known so it can be repeated by your allies and emails on talk radio and cable TV. Think how easy it would have been for the Democrats to have a central message, Bush is unfit to be president. They could hammer that home again and again, and it's so easy to get away with it, and it's so easy to do. He said, look what he's done to the economy. Look what he's done to the war. Look what he's done to everything he's touched. He's not fit to be president. He can't fill the shoes. He can't do the job. God bless his pointed little head and his IQ of 12, but he just can't do it. He's not up to the job. He doesn't have the tools. He's not fit to be president. Had they hammered that home, it would have stuck. It's that easy. Even independent groups barred from coordinating with Bush ran Kerry flip-flop ads, Clinton says, because his message was so clear. The repetition drowned out Democrats' belated efforts to counter the GOP portrayal of Kerry. I'd put John Kerry's character up against Bush's character any time. But nobody ever laid a glove on Bush. If you don't fight back, you're going to lose for sure. Why can't anybody see the obvious? If the Democrats want to win in 08, they need to have me on the team. They don't have to fly me to Washington. They don't have to pay me. They don't have to pay my meals, put me in a hotel. All they have to do is include me in the emails. Bart, this is what we plan for tomorrow. Got any ideas? Sometimes I write, no. That looks good to me. But the other 99% of the time, I'm going to say, yeah, do something. You're not doing a damn thing. Why don't you fight back? So if they want to win, let's find a way to get me on the team in 08. I am not kidding.
You don't think that fondling a woman's buttocks, fondling her breasts, talking to her on a work environment, on a soundstage, that's not serious?
I think it's wrong, but I think you guys in the press constantly have to really dig to find something really bad. And I think Arnold Schwarzenegger, to be honest with you, as a movie star, in a way has a right to expect, I would think, women to be interested in him sexually. And so I think that probably was not a miscalculation on his part. But again, I want to say that what happened to those women was wrong.
All right, our number is 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. Robert Greene, CEO of Fraser Foods, on Arnold Schwarzenegger's admission that, you know what, he did the wrong thing. He did the wrong thing a few years ago by fondling women. Question for you, Mr. Green. What do you think should be done in light of all this? What do you think in terms of, we're talking about fondling breasts, grabbing buttocks, lewd remarks?
Well, lewd remarks that's what I'm sure they were complimentary. If you talk about lewd remarks, I love it when women say that he mentioned my breasts as if that's bad.
Do you think that's the right environment to say, hey, your breasts look great and you're in a workplace?
Well, I don't think it may be the right environment, but I certainly wouldn't call it anything that is harassing. I dare say women would like men to notice their breasts. I think it's interesting. I think that you say something against an African-American, and you're going to get a spear in your back, and rightly so. You say something about a woman, and you know what, in time she sees that you're really just complimenting her, and I think that's the difference. And so I think these women should back off and rethink what Mr. Schwarzenegger did, and I think they would find that he was intending to compliment them.
So if a woman has a complaint about being sexually harassed, though...
And where's the man in her life?
Well, what's he going to do?
He's going to tell her, back it off. You're messing with a great man's career.
What if she's telling the truth? You can't honestly believe that a man or a brother or a boyfriend or a husband would ask a woman who has legitimate sexual harassment complaints to back it off.
I would certainly ask them to step in and find out the veracity of it and then tell her to back off because this is the governor. Let me tell you something, Mr. Henry. My daughter, Melissa, she was 20 at the time. She came into my office and told me that some guy at work had tried to stick his hand down the front of her slacks. Where she worked. She worked at a bank. She worked with an investment banker. And I said, who? And she said it was the COO of the company. And I told her...
That is the chief operating officer.
That is correct. And I said, okay, what are you trying to do? She said, try to stick his hand down my pants. I said, well, you know what, honey? We're not going to do anything about this one because this one is important. That's Daddy's business partner. We do a lot of business together. She looked hurt. I understood her hurt. I was outraged for her, but I had to make a choice. Do I let her go ahead and file sexual harassment? Or what I did do is I bought her a beautiful 250 SL Mercedes. She loved it. And
Where's your daughter live now?
Phil, my daughter passed on 3 years ago. She was 30 years old.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry to hear that. What happened?
She took her own life with sleeping pills. She was depressed.
I'm very sorry to hear that.
That's all right. We have every day we bless the time that we had on this earth with her.
All right. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. I didn't know that his daughter killed herself.
I said maybe you're gonna be the one that saves me.
Don't touch that dial. Though you don't have a dial because you're probably listening to this on the computer.